This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
Makerculture, taking things into our own hands.
A podcast series by 2009 online journalism students at Ryerson University in Toronto, Ontario.
And at the University of Western Ontario in London, Ontario.
Hello, and welcome to the Maker Culture Podcast, co-published by Rabble.ca and the Tyee.ca. Maker Culture? That's coders, fabricators, foodies, artists, educators, activists, even scientists, grabbing the do-it-yourself ethic with both hands and changing our world in the process. This episode, we get our hands around personal fabrication. What would you do with a machine that could make anything? It sounds like something out of Star Trek, right? Well, science fiction has a funny way of becoming science fact overnight, and your desktop replicator might arrive sooner than you think. That's what personal fabrication is all about, making it easier for people to make things for themselves, taking product design out of the hands of the few and into the hands of the many. It's becoming possible because there's been a quiet revolution in fabrication technology. Best of all, the technology is friendly and it's getting cheap. Now it's getting into the hands of ordinary citizens. In this podcast, Mike Kennedy will take a look at the current state of the art in fabrication technology. Then Christian Bergmeister will tell us about a global open source project with a singular aim: to create a machine that can replicate itself. And if that sounds a little far out, wait till you hear what Matt Lundy has to say about the future of fabrication. So at the very center of the personal fabrication scene is an incredibly powerful tool, the 3D printer. Mike Kennedy, help us out here. What is a 3D printer?
A 3D printer, it's more or less exactly what it sounds like. Think about a printer head flying back and forth across a sheet of paper. Now imagine that printer head is more like a glue gun pushing out a fine thread of hot plastic. So every time it makes a pass, it adds another microscopic layer of material. So eventually, it builds that material up into a three-dimensional form.
Okay, so this thing is going to turn my essay into three dimensions?
Well, no. You'll still need some pretty impressive writing skills to do that. But in the same way your inkjet printer understands your word processing files, a 3D printer recognizes files from 3D design programs like SolidWorks or Art of Illusion. So you draw your object, feed the file to the printer, and a few minutes later, out it comes.
Okay, so what are people making with these things? What do they use them for?
Well, here, check this out.
Okay, so what I'm looking at, you've handed me, it's sort of a cylinder with sort of a swirly shape to it, and it's got a cap that threads on. It's quite a lovely little design, actually.
It's pretty cool, eh?
Yeah, and so this came out of a printer.
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty modest example you have there, but you get the idea. They're mostly used for prototyping, and it gives designers a chance to print out a really accurate approximation of a product before it goes into production. And that way, they really get a sense of the touch and the feel of an object. But as the technology gets refined, they're starting to be used to create final products as well.
Okay, so where can I get a look at one of these things in action?
Well, it turns out Western's been using 3D printers for over a decade to supply materials to various faculties right here on campus, and engineering, architecture, and medicine. I met with Chris Vandelaar, and he's a project manager at the University Machine Services.
For us, primarily, it's wind tunnel models, pressure models specifically. They allow us to recreate the intricate details of architecture without heavy machine costs. We do a lot of medical stuff. We do all kinds of tools for medical robots. There's many implantable materials, so that's a big thing now with medical implants and bone replacement and things like that.
Okay, so those are some pretty down-to-earth examples of how this stuff is being used. Now give us some more space age application.
All right. Okay, well, do you remember a couple years back, the space shuttle Endeavour got damaged on takeoff, and they didn't know how to fix it? Well, I spoke with Kristen Genteas at Symmetric Solutions, and she told me a story about a Canadian company who used Canadian hardware to help NASA solve a potential disaster.
A client in Ottawa called NEPTEC had the tile damage scanned with the Canadarm while the shuttle was in space, and they literally printed copies of the tiles to visually see the extent of the damage, and the decision was made not to repair the tiles, and that mission re-entered.
Well, that's some amazing Canadian know-how, Mike. But, you know, when I think NASA, I think expensive. What will a 3D printer set me back?
Well, they're pretty pricey for the average Joe. They run anywhere from $15,000 right up into the millions of dollars. Now, if you don't happen to have that kind of money to spare, but you really want a 3D printer, I suggest you talk to Christian about a RepRap.
It's funny you mention it, Mike, because that's exactly what I'm going to do. Okay, so we've heard about the state of the art in fabrication technology, and now let's find out about what's going on underground. Christian, what is a RepRap machine?
That's what we're listening to right now. You know how Mike told us about 3D printers? Well, a RepRap is a homemade version of that. So basically, the RepRap was created by Adrian Bowyer, and he's a mechanical engineering professor at the University of Bath in England. I'll let him explain a little bit more about what RepRap's all about.
RepRap is short for Replicating Rapid Prototyper, what in the press they call a 3D printer. That's to say it's a machine that you can plug into a computer and that prints any, within reason, three-dimensional shape that you can design in plastic. And the thing about RepRap is that it's designed to print out a significant fraction of its own parts. So if you've got a RepRap machine, you can use it to make another RepRap machine.
Okay, so let me get this straight. This thing can replicate itself?
Whoa, well, not quite yet. Right now, it can replicate about 60% of its own component parts. But the goal of the project is complete self-replication.
Okay, that's pretty wild. Now, so I want to use this thing to make a robot army. How do I get my hands on one?
Well, in the spirit of maker culture, you've got to do it yourself. So a big component of the RepRap project is open sourcing. So basically what that means is that the instructions on how to put the RepRap machine together and all the printing software for actually printing out the parts, they're all available online for free. So I asked Adrian Bowyer why he made the RepRap open source, and here's what he said.
It seemed to me when I started the project that this was a potentially very powerful technology. And if you have a powerful technology and you restrict it in some way, for example, you try and protect what people call intellectual property or in it and so on, then you divide the world into haves and have-nots. And that's not a good thing with powerful technology. It should be available to everybody. The only way to make it available to everybody is to make it open source, release it free so anyone can have it. But about 3 minutes after I'd had that thought, I had a far more practical thought, which is that if you've got a machine that's designed to copy itself, you've got to give it away because you can't sell it. You only ever sell one.
Okay, but you still need to buy all the materials to build it, right? How much does that wind up costing you?
Well, to put it in perspective, you can build a RepRap machine for about the price of a netbook, about $500. For a guy like Tim, who's part of the RepRap Michigan group, that's a whole big part of the appeal.
I'd learned about rapid prototyping machines and, you know, searched for an affordable one. There aren't any. The least expensive ones are $5,000 to $10,000 a piece. And then I found out about RepRap and the fact that you could build one of these things for something like $500, and then learned that it could reproduce most of its own parts, and I was hooked. I just decided I had to have one.
Okay, so now you've built your machine. What do you make on it?
Well, anything that you can think of, I guess. When you run out of your own ideas, you can find out more online. There's this website called Thingiverse, and it was created by a RepRap member, Zach Smith. So on the website, you can find designs that other people have uploaded, and you can even upload your own. So there's a huge range of objects that are available out there right now. You can make anything from a code hook to a shot glass, or you can print out parts to make another RepRap, which is what it was designed for. One guy even printed out an engagement ring.
An engagement ring. How did that turn out?
Well, apparently she accepted. It's just one example of what Adrian outlines as the goal of personal fabrication.
It's a liberating technology, isn't it? If you are constrained only to buy what manufacturers make, then you have to go with what their designers think you might want. But if you've got the ability easily to make anything for yourself, then you can get it exactly as you like it. And what's more, you don't have to pay very much for it either. You don't even necessarily have to pay anything for it except for the cost of the raw materials, which are extremely cheap.
Okay, so we actually got to see one of these things in action recently, and you did a little personal fabrication of your own. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, well, a few weeks ago, we went on a road trip to Ann Arbor, Michigan to visit a RepRap group there. And what I did was I got a chance to actually print my own design that I made.
Okay, so what was involved with that from start to finish? Can you walk us through that?
Okay, well, first I downloaded a 3D modeling program for free, and I made a design of a button. Basically, what was involved with that, I had to read a tutorial to learn how to utilize the program, and then I applied what I learned to make my object.
Right. And how difficult was it to learn the software?
There was a little bit of a learning curve, but the tutorial was great because it taught you some basic concepts that you can apply to make other different things. So basically, once I had my design, I was able to send the file to the Michigan RepRap group, and they could print it out for me.
Right. And what was the result? How did that turn out?
Well, I've actually got it right here with me. As you can see, it was built layer after layer, and it's actually quite a sturdy little button. It took about half an hour to print out, and one of the RepRap guys just had to convert my file into G-code so that the RepRap machine could read it.
That's a mighty big button you got there. Have you got a jacket big enough to put that on?
Well, no, I don't. I was thinking of putting on my belt buckle.
Okay, well, that would be one use for it. Okay, now, it sounds pretty easy. You make it sound pretty easy. Is this something, can you see this having a mass appeal? Can you see this being something that anybody could do?
Well, certainly, if I can do it, I think anyone can do it. And if you devote a little bit of time to learning the software to actually build a 3D object, then the process after that is really quite easy. The machine, all you have to do is press a button, like I said, and wait half an hour, and it printed it out layer by layer.
Very cool. Well, thanks for bringing us up to speed on the whole RepRap project, Christian. And next up, we've got Matt Lundy. Okay, so now that we got a handle on the state of the art in personal fabrication, Matt Lundy is here to blow our minds with a report on the future. Matt, where is this all headed?
Well, I actually had the chance to look into the future, 200 years from now. You were there, only you had the toned body of a 20-year-old athlete and a thick, burly mustache.
Okay, well, I'll let the mustache part slide for now, but when did I start going to the gym? That doesn't sound like me.
You haven't, at least not in the future.
Okay, I'm getting confused now.
Then I have two words for you. Organ printing. Think about the 3D printing Christian and Mike were talking about. But replace melted down plastic with bio-ink, a material made from living cells. The end result, at least sometime down the line, will be a manufactured organ.
That's all very interesting, but where did this part about me in the future with the mustache and stuff come from? I'm not getting that.
A researcher took me there. I spoke with Dr. Vladimir Mironov at the Medical University of South Carolina. He thinks organ printing is just the tipping point in the future of fabrication.
If you can build human organ, then you can build another human organ. You can build finger, you can build hand, you can build hand, you can build brain, and you can build what? Human. And if you can print human, then you don't need sex, you don't need woman, you don't need anything. That will be a revolution in human evolution. It will be next step to the human progress, and I couldn't even imagine how we can live, because you don't need children, you will not die, you can be printed again.
So, sorry, what did he just say?
Humans can be reprinted. Just like writing, you mess up the rough copy, you print out another one. You know, I realize it sounds pretty wacky, but we're talking about something pretty far down the line.
Yeah, I've got to say it sounds a little more sci-fi than reality. It seems to me that like a lot of this stuff just won't be happening in our lifetime or even our children's lifetime. So tell me about something that I'm bound to see before I'm old and gray. Well, okay, before I'm old.
Do you like your nose?
It's okay, yeah. I'm all right with it.
Well, I'm not a huge fan of mine. A few summers ago, my girlfriend and I were surfing in British Columbia. Now, this was her first time surfing, and she made the amateur mistake of not holding onto her board when a huge wave came and swept it up. Next thing I know, a 9-foot longboard hit me square on the nose and broke it. Fortunately, at least for my nose, Dr. Mironov has reassured me about the future of medical science in the short term.
You remember this movie Face Off, Travolta, and how they print ear? 10 years we can do it. So if you don't like your ears or nose, don't worry, we can cut it and print it again. The chairman of Department of Surgery in Stanford University, he said such phrase, there is no such thing as a science fiction, there is only science eventuality.
Okay, so this is really interesting. I think I've thought of something that I really need. I'm looking for a wine-resistant liver. Is that a possibility with this technology?
Maybe not wine-resistant, but certainly a replacement. The big thing for Mironov and other researchers is quality of life. You start printing organs, and maybe people could throw away their dialysis machines.
But in the end of the day, you have a huge population of old people, you know, all these baby boomers, and they want to have good life. And they don't want to wait 5 years until somebody provides them kidney. They don't want to die. Organ printing, this is my dream.
So I'm thinking, Jeff, it's only a matter of time before the RepRap guys catch wind of this and all hell breaks loose. I'm talking desktop organ printing.
Well, this has been fascinating, Matt. You really did it. You blew our minds permanently.
And with that, we are permanently finished this episode of Maker Culture, taking things into our own hands. If you'd like to send us feedback on this show or any episode in the series, you can email us at makingmakers@me.com. And please join in the discussion babble at rabble.ca/babble or on the Tie at thetie.ca. We'd love it if you subscribe to this series on the Rabble Podcast Network at rabble.ca/rpn or in iTunes so you can get the next episode fresh from our maker hands to your ears. Now, as a little souvenir of our Rust Belt road trip, we're going to leave you with a track by the incomparable Detroit Cobras. You can learn more about this amazing band at DetroitCobras.org. Thanks for listening, and remember, it's your world. What are you going to make of it?
See that I'm a silly sack. You know I'm living.